You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, Newtown was December, 14th? Roughly 11 months ago. 11 months and a week or two. And since that time, officially, 9,900 people have died from gun shootings in the United States. It works out to about 90 people a day. Actually, if you use the CDC estimates and include the numbers that are not reported as gun shootings, but rather are reported as, for example, suicides, or are reported, you know, via hospitals and these sorts of things rather than via police departments. According to Slate magazine, we've had 28,600 people die as a result of guns. 60% of gun deaths are suicides, which are almost never reported as gun deaths. So Slate is saying, roughly 28,600 people dying. So this year in mass shootings, it's pretty amazing. And we had another one over at LAX. Now, I realize, you know, some folks are saying, well, you know, we just need to make it illegal to bring guns into LAX. Yeah, like that's going to stop this guy? This guy had not gone through security, you'll recall. So it seems to me like this fetish, this religion that we have in the United States, that everybody should have the right to have as many weapons as they want, of whatever kind they want. You know, after the mass gun violence thing in Australia some years back, I think it was in 96, they said enough of this already. They did a massive nationwide gun buyback. They banned high-capacity clips. They banned assault rifles. They banned semi-automatic weapons, period, unless you were a police officer. And there has not been a single mass shooting in Australia since then. In the 18 years prior to that, there have been 14 of them. So maybe it's time for us to seriously talk about gun control. Austin Peterson, libertarian commentator and editor of the LibertarianRepublic.com, is on the line with us. Austin, the website, thelibertarianrepublic.com.
Thanks very much for having me, Tom.
Sure. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, it looks as if this was another random act of violence by a nut, and it's very hard to predict that kind of an event or to prevent it. He didn't go through security, as you said. And the type of gun that he was using, which was the Smith & Wesson 223 model, has been falsely reported as an assault rifle, which is technically inaccurate because an assault rifle has a fully automatic setting. This was the civilian sporting model.
You're splitting here, Austin.
But what I'm trying to say is that
this is the same gun that Adam Lanza used in Newtown.
And the type of, remember, it's really not the gun that shoots it. It's the type of round that you get hit with. And, of course, the shooter was stopped with a gun, so it was stopped by people with guns. So it's important.
Police people.
Right. Well, you know, it's very important that police have the right to stop shooters with their guns.
I'm not suggesting we should disarm our police, Austin.
Right. Well, I'm not either, but what I'm saying, too.
But why this weapon, there is no hunter in America who would be able to hold their head up other than maybe Dick Cheney. After going out looking for deer or duck with a weapon like this.
Well, no.
To the best of my knowledge, there are no serious sports shooting competitions, and I've been to a number of them over the years, with these kinds of weapons. People don't use these kind of weapons for target practice. They don't use these kind of weapons for self-defense if you're out, you know, walking through the desert and you're worried about rattlesnakes. These are weapons of war that have been slightly modified so that when you hold the trigger down, it doesn't spray continuously at the pull of the trigger every time you want to fire a different bullet. Frankly, in my opinion, there's no place for these weapons in the United States outside of the hands of the military.
Okay, well, you know, you're setting yourself for tyranny there, Tom. I mean, I hate to say that, but the reality is that the Second Amendment wasn't created for hunting. The founding fathers weren't thinking about the right to shoot deer.
No, the Second Amendment was created so that instead of having a standing army, we could have a citizens' militia. What's the first half of the sentence of the Second Amendment? In order to maintain a well-regulated militia being essential to the security of a free state.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it starts.
The right of the people, you've got to continue, you should continue that, Tom. The right
to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged, right.
Shall not be infringed, and so shall not be infringed, of course, means shall not be infringed. So, again, I don't want to debate the legal aspect of this, Tom. What I really would like to debate with you is the motives for this. And I think there may be actually something that you and I might agree on here, because both you and I have debated the conspiracy theorists from Texas, the people who are promulgating the New World Order, sort of what they call the conspiracy theories that I think have been arguing, have been driving people to madness for a long time. Now, we know
Adam Lanza's mom was a prepper. This guy apparently was carrying that kind of literature with him, making those kind of claims.
Right. And so although I consider myself very, very, you know, very much a patriot or someone who believes in the Second Amendment, I have argued against these conspiracy theorists because a lot of times what happens is that they get information that's cooked up by foreign intelligence agencies that's really just propaganda that spread these lies and conspiracies about the U.S. government that are untrue. And it drives people to do these kinds of things.
How about this cooked up by companies that want to make a profit?
Well, I mean, that's fairly broad, but let me just stick to what I'm saying here because, you know, these New World Order conspiracy theories that people talk about and stuff like that, a lot of this stuff is cooked up by foreign intelligence agencies and spread in the United States, as a means of undermining the people of the United States. Probably the most famous example of that was the active measures placed by the KGB, you know, to spread conspiracy theories in the United States that JFK was killed by the CIA or LBJ and all that kind of stuff. And that spreads hatred and dissension and mistrust of government across the United States of the American citizens. Now, there are legitimate reasons to mistrust government, but what we should be doing is telling people, you know, that there are, you know, these sinister forces that is a New World Order Illuminati conspiracy theory that would make people go out and commit these kinds of acts. You know, I have said publicly, Tom, that these conspiracy theorists should be held morally accountable if someone goes out and does something like this for spreading all of this misinformation and lies. And I think that's
so you're arguing for, in order to defend the Second Amendment, you want to abridge the First Amendment.
No, not at all. But what I think that people need to start doing, Tom, people like yourself and myself, is to start having more conversations about the effects of this free speech. Now, I don't want to limit anyone's free speech, and you should be able to say whatever you want to say. But, Tom, you and I both know very well what comes out of those propaganda creation places like in Austin.
I think there's something much more specific going on here. If you go back to the decade and a half or so when we had 15 or 20 of these mass shootings in the workplace, after the mid-80s, and we refer to them as going postal because they all happen in post offices. This was right after Reagan semi-privatized the post office and started doing major cuts both in pay and benefits to postal workers. For 32 years now, 32 years of Reaganomics, we've seen the middle class get wiped out. And along with it, we're seeing incidents of this kind of violence and mental illness go up the same way that Pickens and Wilkerson document happens in country after country when the social safety net gets frayed and the economy goes down.
As understanding social science, that causation, you know, correlation is not causation, Tom.
I think in this case it is.
Well, you'd have to really have a lot of good documented evidence for that, Tom, and it's a very, very...
Go to equalitytrust.org.uk. It's all right there.
All right. Well, I will definitely take a look at that. I'm always open-minded, Tom, but I think that the real problem lies in the fact that we have so much misinformation and propaganda being spread across the United States, and maybe some of that is spread by corporations. I couldn't say that.
I don't think misinformation makes people desperate enough to commit suicide and try to go out in a blaze of glory. I think that's something.
Well, it apparently happened because this shooter had that evidence on him, and it appears that that was his motive.
Well, I would say correlation doesn't mean causation. But anyhow, Austin Peterson, thelibertarianrepublic.com. Thanks for dropping by, Austin.
Have a good day, Tom.
Good talking.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What are we going to do about this? We got more guns than anybody else on Earth, it seems, and we got more gun murders than pretty much anybody else, it seems. Might the two be associated? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Andrew Campbell, our senior producer with The Big Picture, is online with us. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Is the NRA guilty of murder?
Yeah, you're going to be similarly talking about what you just did in your rant and what you talked about with Austin. We'll be talking about the shooting at LAX over the weekend and really talk about how the main obstacle to curbing this epidemic of gun violence in America is fighting back against the NRA. I mean, the NRA is the brick wall that we're facing right now, and really overcoming their power and their lobbying force in Washington is what needs to happen if we want to stop this violence.
Yeah, we could begin by undoing the Tehart Amendment. I mean, you know, it's insane that it is illegal for the federal government to compile statistics on gun deaths.
Yep.
It's just crazy. Okay, why are the insurance companies lying about Obamacare?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the uproar that came out last week and really enraged some Americans as well as Republicans in Washington. The reports that millions of Americans were receiving letters saying that their insurance coverage would be dropped because of Obamacare. But it turns out that many of these letters sent by insurance companies were very deceiving, and they weren't really painting the full picture of what's going to happen to these Americans and their health care coverages. So we're going to be talking to a guest about that. We're still working on one, though.
Yeah. This is you get this letter. It says, your $200 a month policy is going to be terminated, but you will automatically be put into a $500 a month policy that's compliant with Obamacare. You don't have to do anything, just hang out. And what they fail to tell you is that, you know, a $400 a month plan that's better than the $500 a month plan is available on the Obamacare exchanges. And by the way, there's a $300 subsidy with it, so it's going to cost you less than the plan you have right now that they're terminating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's just totally screwy.
Exactly.
So, okay, and then how did Boulder, Colorado get a carbon tax? This looks interesting.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to Jonathan Cohn. He's an expert on carbon tax, and he's actually in Colorado. And this Boulder has introduced their own carbon tax program, which we've been talking a lot about. The program is a very real way to curb climate change and the devastating effects that global warming is having on our planet.
Do you know how the carbon tax in Colorado works, or are we going to learn that tonight?
We're going to learn that from Jonathan.
Okay. All right. It sounds like a fascinating topic. And Everything You Know Is Wrong, In the Name of God, Cameron Stoth?
Yeah. You'll hear every so often on the news how a child dies because their family refused medical attention. It can be something simple just for the flu or even a cold, and they believed in the power of prayer and the power of faith to heal their sick children. So we're going to be talking about the true story of the fight to save children from faith healing practices. This has a lot to do with the Followers of Christ sect church out in Oregon and in the West, but it's really startling stuff that they're not allowing their children to have access to medicine. Faith can do a lot of things, but sometimes you just really need health care to get better.
Yeah, but healing bacterial infections is not high on the list.
No, certainly not.
You know, for example,
yeah.
or diabetes, actually.
Exactly.
I remember when we lived in Oregon, there was a child who died of type 1 diabetes because her family said that they could pray away the diabetes rather than giving her insulin.
Exactly.
And that's not good.
No.
Okay, Andrew Campbell. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll see you tonight. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. This year in mass shootings, since Newtown, we've had 16 mass shootings. I guess this makes 17, or maybe this is the 16th. This one at LAX last Friday. That happened as our show was opening, or just before our show opened. And apparently by a guy who was thinking very much like the Newtown shooter's mother was thinking, that the New World Order is here, that the phrase that was popularized by President George Herbert Walker Bush during his presidency, and that it's a dystopia rather than a utopia. I think Bush thought of it as a utopia. And you know, what are we going to do about this? This is, you know, here are the, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 4 people dead, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 5 people dead, Herkimer County, New York, 4 people dead, Manchester, Illinois, 5, Federal Way, Washington State, 4 people, Akron, Ohio, 4 people, Waynesville, Clarksville, West Virginia, Chicago, Dallas, Hialeah, Florida, Crab Orchard, Tennessee, Washington, D.C. This, the Navy Yard shooting, this was one of the very worst. It's quite remarkable what's going on. You say, well, our society is melting down. Why is our society melting down? Well, I think that a good piece of this is that the takers are stripping our society, and people are increasingly frantic. The American middle class is increasingly under pressure. When people are under pressure, they snap. I mean, there's that old BBC piece, you know, more suicides under conservative rule. Many of these mass shootings have been suicides. There are people killing as many people as they can in the expectation that they will be the last person killed. And very often they kill themselves or they provoke the police to kill them. So it's a variation on suicide by cop. Paul Buchheit is writing about this, how the super rich are abandoning America. It used to be that wealthy people needed this country. Henry Ford needed this country. John Rockefeller needed this country. They didn't want to pay their, well, Henry Ford ultimately did pay his workers a little bit better than his peers, but it wasn't his idea as popular lore goes. It was actually the idea of his wife and his business partner who ran as a progressive for state senate in Michigan after being Henry Ford's business partner. But in any case, these guys, they needed an American customer base. They needed American infrastructure. They needed the American court system. They needed an educated workforce. They needed America to work. Historically, wealthy people in the United States in the founding of the Republic until Reaganomics needed America to work. And so they worked with America. They helped make America work. But ever since Reaganomics kicked in, and along with it, free trade-onomics, ever since what we call globalization started happening aggressively in the 80s, and then for the United States went on steroids in the 90s with NAFTA, SHAFTA, CAFTA, all these WTO stuff, ever since that time, what we have been seeing is the steady erosion, the steady death of America's middle class. And when that happens, when people's economic abilities, when people's ability to function economically begins to crash, to deteriorate, you see a whole bunch of social ills start increasing. Teenage pregnancies go up, STDs go up, mental illness goes up, drug abuse, illegal and prescription goes up. Suicides go up. Accident rates actually go up. Sicknesses go up. Mental illness goes up. And violence goes up, including these mass killings. And if you have violence going up in a society that is super armed, I mean, the TSA is reporting that this year over 2010, the number of people being caught with firearms as they try to go through security is up 30%. Why? Because more and more people there are just carrying guns everywhere they go all the time. And they get to the airport and they just, you know, they haven't thought about it in weeks because it's just always in their purse or always in their briefcase. And hey, you know, they don't, it's not like strapping it on every day. It's someplace where it's always available. And they don't realize that they've got it with them at the airport in most cases. So what Paul Buchheit points out is that the super rich have taken in $25 trillion, a small group of takers, $25 trillion with a T. This is globally. Well, actually, no, this is just in the United States. U.S. wealth has increased from $47 trillion in 2008 to $72 trillion in mid-2013. Okay, so an additional $25 trillion in wealth has been taken by the super rich in the United States. $25 trillion. Keep in mind the GDP of the entire United States is only $15 trillion a year. $25 trillion since 2008 has been made by the super wealthy. But federal income taxes have actually gone down. Collections, the amount of money that is collected, has gone down from 2008 to 2012. and corporations have cut their tax rate in half. There's no wealth tax, no financial transaction tax. Infrastructure is falling apart. Public education is falling apart. And he points out, this is his item number two. You can see this at Common Dreams. You can see it at Alternet. It's all over the Internet right now. Paul Buchheit's piece is brilliant. How the super rich are abandoning America. He says, for the first time in history, they believe they don't need the rest of us. They've always needed the middle class to work in their factories and buy their stuff, but it's no longer true. They can run a factory in China and they can sell their stuff in Germany, which has a strong middle class because it's mostly unionized. Factory workers in Germany average around $50 an hour. You heard that right. Yeah, and they pay around 40% in taxes. Yes, you heard that right too. So, they got their yachts and their helicopters and their submarines. They don't need us. They got private emergency rooms, private schools, private gated communities.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And because they don't need the rest of us and they don't need the infrastructure that is historically America, that has been America, for 30 years they've been funding politicians who are letting it go to hell. We are seeing this all over the country. You know, it's from Detroit going bankrupt to, Paul Buchheit mentioned Sandy Springs. I used to live in Sandy Springs. It's a northern suburb of Atlanta. This is where Louise and I lived, and our three kids were young then. In fact, they went to school in Sandy Springs. No, wait a minute. We lived in Marietta. Sandy Springs is a little closer into Atlanta. We lived in Marietta. But Sandy Springs is saying, yeah, we're not going to pay into Fulton County, which they're part of or contiguous with. We're going to hire our own. We're going to basically privatize our services. And Detroit going bankrupt. It's like all across America, what we're seeing is this country being ripped apart while the super rich who have taken $25 trillion in extra money since 2008 have taken over $2 trillion in tax expenditures, tax underpayments, tax haven holdings, and unpaid corporate taxes. And you got corporations who had, this is their business model. I mean, the Walmart, McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell business model is pay people so little that the federal government, that is you and me, the average taxpayer, subsidize their workers. And then when you go into a community, demand that they give you free land and tax abatements and all kinds of goodies to put a store there or a factory there. This is happening over and over and over again. And you got, Apple, right, stashing billions of dollars overseas to avoid paying taxes on it. Apple would not be in existence if it wasn't for a Department of Defense research product called ARPANET, which we now call the Internet. It was created by the Defense Department. It was created by our R&D, the Apple operating system. Steve Jobs basically knocked off one that was, it was called the Star operating system, as I recall. And I think it was HP. It was another company. He went and saw it and says, that's really cool. But it had come in large part out of U.S. government R&D. The pharmaceutical industry makes a lot of their money off R&D that's done in universities across the United States that you and I pay for. These companies have American, educated workforces, but they don't want to pay the taxes on it. I mean, people who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity want to make sure that they don't have to pay their share. And they do so by telling average working Americans that you're paying too much in taxes. We all need a tax cut. Right. Well, frankly, I think that the average working person is probably paying too much in taxes. But the top tax rate that Reagan dropped from 74% down to 28% was not the top tax rate on people making $50,000 a year. It was the top tax rate of people making millions of dollars a year on the Limbaughs and Hannitys of the world. It's really quite remarkable. And then you get guys like Eduardo Saverin, right? This was the Mark Zuckerberg's roommate at Harvard. He made billions on his 4% share in Facebook And what did he do? He skipped town to avoid paying taxes. I think I'll leave the United States. Now, it's a little, I think it's a little harder to criticize him specifically because he didn't start out as an American. He started out as a Brazilian. Although he came to school here and he made his money here, you would think he should pay his taxes here. Nah, not so much. There is a sense of entitlement, and increasingly the very rich, I mean, they read Ayn Rand, they go to these Ayn Rand Institute things, they get the talking points and memos from the former Charles Koch Foundation, now known as the Cato Foundation, or the Cato Institute, or the Heritage Foundation that was started in part by the Koch brothers and Paul Weyrich and buddies. All of which basically justify this Calvinism that, hey, if you're rich, it must be because you're a good, smart, brilliant person. You deserve it. And average working people who just are having a hard time even getting by, you know, they're just not so good. And what, everybody should have health care? Oh, that's an outrage. Everybody should have a free college education? No, 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 no. We can make over $1 trillion in profit on college. And in just one generation, we've gone from there being virtually no college debt in the United States. In my dad's generation, there arguably was no college debt. Pretty much everybody went to college for free on the GI Bill. In fact, they got paid. My dad got paid to go to college, as did Louise's father, who ended up the assistant attorney general of the state of Michigan. The GI Bill paid all the way through his law school. But these guys said, oh, we can't have that. Instead of the federal government investing in our people, in our roads, in our bridges, in our infrastructure, in our intellectual commons, our kids, our young people. No, no, we got to figure out a way to make a buck off them. And then you wonder why in a well-armed society where anybody can lay their hands not just on a gun, but on a weapon of war, on something that will kill a lot of people very quickly, you wonder why when people snap, they snap and they grab a gun. Tim in St. Cloud, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. You want to disagree with me about gun control?
Yeah, Tom, you need to focus on people, not guns.
That's nonsense.
There's one demographic in this country that represents about 7% of the population. And according to Eric Holder's Justice Department, they, the black male, commit about 50% of the murders in this country.
That is not only nonsense, Tim, it is racist nonsense.
Well, it's right on the Justice Department website.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Why do you think that might be, Tim?
I don't know. Eric Holder's black and so is Obama.
You don't know. You don't know why it might be that minorities in this country are disproportionately poor compared to people like yourself.
Well, no, you said
it's, you've never considered that? You've never thought about it?
Is it true or isn't it?
Is it true that minorities are poor? Yeah. Is it true that poor people are more likely to commit crimes? Yeah. Whether half of all the murders are created by black people, I don't know. You know, wouldn't surprise me if disproportionately.
It's a fact.
But
it's an undisputed fact.
Okay. So what does that mean, Tim?
That means you need to focus on things like education, jobs, the war on drugs, prison. But don't take away my right to defend myself from these people.
These people? From the black people?
The murdering. The people that are committing the murders, Tom. I didn't say they commit all of them. I said they commit half of them.
Yeah. And white people who kill black people are half as likely to go to jail for it or get executed
for it. Oh, you and your nonsensical BS. Why don't you just get out?
You don't like my statistics. You just like your own statistics.
No, you school statistics.
Okay. I'm concerned that Tim is going to start getting into language that you don't use on the radio. I don't know. But Shane is starting to get nervous there. We have right now, because of Todd Tehart, you got the Tehart Amendment, which says that You know, this is a public health issue, people killing each other with guns. Now, I would submit to you that it's a public health issue that is the consequence of an economic policy, Reaganomics, and a racial policy, you know, 300, 400 years of slavery in this country, followed by 100 years of legal apartheid, followed by multiple generations of discrimination and racist comments, like basically what our caller just did. Let's take one statistic completely out of context and throw it out and say, oh, therefore, I need an assault weapon. This is not good for this country. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Donald.
Yes, hi, Tom. I was listening to what you were saying about what's happening to the customer base that we have in America not being needed anymore. That's really true. I work for a corporation, and I don't want to mention their name, but the thing is they're looking to where they're going to go into this global economy type thing that President Obama is speeding down the way to get us involved in.
I know. This is a bipartisan crisis.
Yeah, and it's getting very scary. It is very scary. Exactly what you said I thought about, too, because when that happens, not only will we no longer have jobs that were outsourced, but even just being a customer will be outsourced.
Right.
They won't care. They simply won't care.
We're already there. We're already there, Don.
Yeah.
We're already there. That's why it used to be, large parts of Detroit that are now poor and black, to go back to our previous caller, used to be middle class and black. They used to be manufacturing areas, right? And the crime rate used to be much, much lower. Poverty is not something that's associated with race unless race is associated with poverty. Excuse me, violence is not something associated with race unless race is associated with poverty. We used to have incredible violence in the Italian community in the United States. We used to have incredible violence in the Irish community in the United States. When those communities were being discriminated against, when those communities were being exploited. But yeah, you're right, Donald. They no longer see us as customers, the very wealthy. And instead, what they try to do is get the word out that, hey, look out for those black people, they're scary. Right? Look out for those brown people, they're scary. Look out for those gay people, they're scary. Look out for anybody except the rich people. Rich people, they're nice, didn't you know?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, like, you know, Bill Gates endowed this foundation. He actually made a profit doing it. But everybody, isn't it wonderful? Look at the good work he's doing. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. James in Fresno, California. Hey, James, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. When you had Mr. Peterson on, I was just trying to clarify, was he talking about like conspiracy theorists and people that sort of fabricate these sort of odd stories or an influence to mentally unstable people?
Yeah, it's a variation on the crazy people line. And as soon as you try to take it to why are people crazy, the libertarians don't want to talk about that because at the end of the day, it's about inequality. And I told him about, equalitytrust.org.uk. I've told Austin about that website at least 30 times in the last two or three years.
Right.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Yeah, come on, give me a
minute. Yeah. I just find it kind of hypocritical because these libertarians and these right-wing conservatives were using the same sort of fabricated stories when President Obama was trying to close loopholes in background checks.
Right.
And they were saying, oh, President Obama's going to come and take your guns, or they were fabricating, the Second Amendment, saying it's there because one day the government might turn against you and you have to defend yourself. I mean, it was the same sort of conspiracy theories that, he's trying to, put on mentally unstable people.
Yeah.
Yet they're the ones that use it.
No, it's anything to avoid a conversation about inequality and how, how basically we're being exploited in this country. James, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Patty in Harstein Island, Washington, listening to KBCS. Am I saying that right, Patty?
Well, you surely did. Thank you so much for taking the call, Tom.
Sure.
I'm a little off topic, but I just wanted to give you a smile. In the current issue of Smithsonian Magazine, retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor has written an article about her robe, the robes. And so I thought I'd just read a couple sentences.
Mm-hmm.
She says, my fondest thoughts about my robe have to do with the tradition at the Supreme Court for putting it on. On argument days, a buzzer sounds about 5 minutes before the oral argument starts. The justices go to the robing room, the court's version of a locker room. Each justice has a locker and attendants that help the justices fasten their robe. And I was kind of thinking that maybe we could teach them to dress themselves and take the money for those attendants and take it from that Supreme Court SNAP robe program and put it back into the SNAP food program.
There you go. This is like in those movies of royalty where you see the servant wench, you know, pulling tight the... What are those things that women used to wear?
That. Yes, they had to have dressers. I mean, I think maybe they should learn to
corsets.
Dress themselves before they should corsets.
Yes.
Before they address our laws, maybe they should address that issue of dressing themselves.
Yeah, good idea. So Sandra Day O'Connor, and she was waxing fondly. Yeah, they really do think of themselves as royalty. But here's the thing, Patty, they actually are royalty. They get to make rules by which the rest of us have to live, and in many cases, they exempt themselves from those rules. They have exempted themselves, for example, from the judicial standards for all federal courts in the United States, which is why Scalia and Thomas have been able to take money from Koch brothers and others, you know, associated groups. And any other federal judge would lose, you know, would get impeached or get bounced out or be the subject of judicial inquiry or fired for that. They really do think that they are royalty because they are. And we need to do something about that. Patty, thank you for sharing that story. I'll have to look it up. Thank you. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Shayla in Hobart, Indiana. Hey, Shayla. Thanks for listening to WCPT. You wanted to respond to the guy who was saying that he needs to have an AR-15 because black people kill people.
Oh, yes, he was very ignorant. And I just wanted to address that. The gangs, where do they get the guns? They're getting the guns from the people who buy them supposedly legally at these gun shows and going to these places where they're not doing background checks, and they're buying multiple purchases of guns and selling them on the streets. If these people wouldn't do that, where would they get? They couldn't go and buy their own gun.
Yeah.
So they're helping the problem.
Well, I think the larger issue, and, you know, to a certain extent, he said, you know, we should be talking about education and jobs and opportunity and economic issues. And he's right on that. I mean, the larger issue is it, first of all, what he's trying to do is he's saying, I'm a white guy, I should be afraid of black people because they kill people. Well, mostly black people are killing black people, number one.
That's right.
And when they kill white people, they're twice as likely to go to prison for it or get electrocuted for it or whatever than a white person killing a black person. But setting that aside for a moment, what we have in the United States is an economy that is going to help because you've got this very, very, very wealthy 1% pulling $25 trillion down and $2 trillion in tax breaks and moving our jobs offshore at the same time. I mean, you know, Jeff Immelt, the guy who is the president's, you know, the head of the president's commission on jobs, you know, at GE, moved a whole bunch of jobs offshore. I mean, it's like, this is like disconnect. You know, our economy is not working, and it's a bipartisan issue. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. It's an American issue, and we need to put our economy back into place. We need to put now to the extent that President Obama has actually tried to do that, Nancy Pelosi actually got legislation at the president's urging through the House of Representatives that would have no longer given tax breaks to companies that send jobs overseas. The Republicans filibustered it in the Senate. You know, the economy to a large extent right now really stinks because the Republicans have obstructed all the efforts by this president. And that bad economy is echoing all the way down to the level of the street gangs, frankly. And it's also echoing all the way down to the crazed shooters. And when we look at these mass shootings, I think of only one that was done by a person of color. I mean, you know, again, he's like, oh, we need to be afraid of people of color. It's the angry white guys who are doing most of the shootings. Anyhow, of the mass shootings. Shayla, thank you for calling, and thank you for the point, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to rant. Terry in Seattle. Hey, Terry.
Good afternoon, Tom. I just got done listening to the little thing you were saying there, and essentially that's why I was calling before, is when you talk about the destruction of the American middle class or the working class in this country, this is not something that just started 5 years ago or 6 years ago. This is something that's been going on for 25 years now.
32. It began with the election of Ronald Reagan.
Right, with Ronald Reagan, absolutely. What it also continued on was keeping people like Alan Greenspan in places of power. Yep. And the other thing that I never hear liberal progressives ever talk about, but as a matter of fact, the statement you just made a moment ago is probably the first time I've heard you say that in a long time. What we all know, the Republican Party and the corporate ownership that that represents is not the only people to blame here. Look, This started with Clinton, with bad trade deals, with appalling immigration policy as it applies to the American worker. Guest worker programs that destroy just as many jobs insourcing is the term that we started to use, and then other people said, well, no, it's bringing jobs back in. Insourcing is the replacement of American workers by guest workers in this country, by companies that go to Democratic congressmen and Democratic senators and say, we can't hire or find qualified people. Well, it was a lie 25 years ago, and it's a lie now. Yep. Listen, Tom, do you think Chuck Schumer is a friend of the American worker?
In some ways he is, but in these regards, no. He's been drinking this free trade Kool-Aid and this let's get more of these visas into the immigration bill Kool-Aid. And it's not just Chuck Schumer. It's with the exception of a few notable people, you know, the Sherrod Browns in the Senate and the Jan Schakowskis in the House, the few progressives in those two bodies. It's basically right across the Democratic Party as well as virtually all of the Republican Party. I agree with you.
When the Democratic Party...
And it's the president.
Right. When the Democratic Party made the statement, I think 7 years ago now, that essentially we have lost the white working class in this country from voting for us, they should have immediately said to that guy that made that statement, I think it was Begala that said it, I'm not sure, he was the head of the Democratic Party at the time, I said right then and there, well, the Democratic Party really is a party of a client group service. They only want to serve their clients now, not the American working class, which made the Democratic Party what it is. Every time a Democratic senator or congressman votes either to keep a guest worker program, which there are more than 20 of them now, in case you don't know,
right,
okay, responsible for at least 5 million jobs in the last 10 years.
Yep.
Every time a Democrat votes for one of these things, he's telling the very same people that you're railing against, the corporatists and the elites in this country, that everything you're doing is fine.
I know.
We don't care.
I know. And you know, you say, okay, what do we do about this? What we do about this is we get money out of politics. We had a caller earlier who pointed out that Sandra Day O'Connor talked about how her favorite part of being on the Supreme Court was having an assistant to help her put her robe on, you know, 5 minutes before they would go out for oral arguments, and this whole ceremony of having the robes put on. They're royalty. That royalty has created this doctrine that money is not money. It's not property. It's speech. And therefore, people with money should be able to create the rules. And that's what they've been doing. They've been creating the rules in a way that those people who've taken $25 trillion while paying lower taxes than before have done so in large part by destroying our jobs. And they own our politicians of both parties. With you, Terry. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at solarworld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Richard Viguerie is on the line with us, conservative direct mail pioneer, the author of Conservatives Betrayed, How George W. Bush and Other Big Government Republicans Hijacked the Conservative Cause. He has a new book coming out shortly called Takeover. His website is conservativehq.com, as in headquarters. And he's got a new piece out, actually, it was a press release. It says, Media Advisory, conservative thought leader takes on privacy issue, which provoked us to invite him on the program. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure, Tom. It was actually an article that appeared in Politico last week.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I must have missed it. But,
I did send out a press release on it because kind of unusual. We've kind of a man bites dog here, a conservative being critical of national defense part of the government, which is unusual. Conservatives have come late to the realization, Tom, that things like the Pentagon and the National Security Agency are all part of the government.
Yeah. And not only that, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. Well, first of all, why don't you define from the conservative worldview perspective the problem?
Well, this is an area where conservatives and liberals, those liberty lovers on the right and the left, you know, really, really come together. We're very concerned about how the government is ignoring the concept of privacy. Privacy used to be a dirty word among many conservatives because the liberal Warren Court back in the 60s or 50s, you know, used the concepts of privacy as the numbers, you know, they thought they saw something in the Constitution. So anyway, privacy was kind of a dirty word for
Are you talking about Roe v. Wade in 73?
Roe v. Wade, yeah. Exactly. And there were other issues dealing with criminal justice, law and order issues,
sure,
that we were very suspect to when the word privacy, appeared. But now we realize that, and quite frankly, you know, Obama is abusing it immensely, but it didn't start with Obama. And, you know, it certainly was going strong under George W. Bush. I think Obama has taken it to a higher level. But it's an issue that where it looks like the government, Republican and Democrat presidents, have just ignored the Fourth Amendment. You know, the Fourth Amendment is very clear that we're supposed to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures, against our persons, houses, papers, and effects. And, this looks like now we have no privacy.
Yeah.
You almost feel like the government's just saying, you know, privacy, get over it. You don't have any more privacy.
Well, back in the 70s, when Frank Church was running the Church Committee hearings, he commented, and I should have grabbed the quote before I went on the air. I saw it this morning, and I meant to print it out and somehow got distracted. But anyhow, he said words to the effect of, should a tyrannical leader ever take over the United States, or should a tyrannical government emerge, then because of the sophistication of the national security state, and keep in mind this was in the 70s, because of the sophistication of the national security state, it would be almost impossible to depose or overcome, even politically to overcome, that government or that leader or leadership, because they know everything you're doing. A much simpler way to say it would be, if the NSA had existed during, in 1773, there never would have been a Boston Tea Party.
Sure.
And there wouldn't have been the conspiracies that led to the American response to the Boston Massacre, and thus to, you know, Concord and you know, on, you know, the American Revolution, frankly. In fact, the conspiracy that led to the Declaration of Independence never would have been able to happen. And I think that this is an issue that absolutely transcends politics, and I don't get, I mean, you know, Dianne Feinstein is a Democrat, theoretically a liberal. I think she's more of a conservative Democrat. But anyway, she's proposing basic legislation that that's in many ways strengthens the NSA or makes legal a lot of what they're doing. You've got Republicans who are fighting with each other to be more hawkish on this. I don't get it. You know, where have we lost our way?
Well, you know, this has been a battle that's been fought for hundreds of years, if not more, Tom. I can't remember exactly the quote. I think it was, you know, Jefferson that said, you know, those who will give up freedom for security deserve neither.
Yeah, it was Franklin. Franklin. But you're right. Yeah.
I was about to say Franklin. Yes, exactly. And so, you know, it's not something new to us. And no, I felt for a long time that George Orwell got it all wrong with 1984,
mm-hmm.
because he talked about how technology would enslave, and, you know, there'd be a tyrannical force that Frank Church talked about that would enslave us. But in the 70s and the 80s, we saw technology bring freedom to those behind the Iron Curtain.
Right.
I remember my son and I went to a conference of 250 freedom fighters worldwide in the Czech Republic, Prague, in late 1980s. We all came with fax machines. Nobody left with a fax machine. They went behind the Iron Curtain and, you know, helped bring down the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it looks like we're 180 degrees away from that, where new technology is going to you know, enslave us, or has that potential. And I think Frank Church was, you know, far ahead of his time, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, and you know, interestingly, I mean, Ayatollah Khomeini came to power in Iran by having people smuggle audio cassette tapes of his speeches into Iran and then reproduce them and distribute them. That was the Walkman, was the technology of that era of the late 70s. And you could argue that Twitter, you know, drove the Arab Spring. So,
exactly.
You know, we've seen technology drive changes, both what appear to be negative changes and positive changes, I guess, depending on your point of view. But I think the concern that you and I are talking about is government basically spying on its people, specifically the American government spying on the American people. It's come out that roughly 70% of the U.S. government's, the National Security Agency's budget has been outsourced. And it, you know, and good guesses are that Pentagon, CIA, and others are in that neighborhood. Ed Snowden, you know, worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, which was owned by the Carlyle Group, which at one point in time had been owned in part by the Bin Laden family. I mean, talk about irony of ironies. Do you see this privatization of what should be the functions of a government accountable to we the people as a problem?
Oh, massive, massive. It is so huge. I don't have my head around it yet. I'm just beginning to get interested and begin to focus on this. I think it's, you know, no different than a lot of Americans here. It just is something we haven't really focused on. We didn't think it was a problem. But quite frankly, Tom, it's much more than just the United States government. It's private corporations. In my article, it was in Politico, I talk about Google. Google is claiming that, and the judge disagreed with them. We've got a case probably going to go to the Supreme Court. Google says because you used our Gmail, or somebody sent you an email using Gmail, you have now by implication, given us the right to do whatever we want with the information that we've gleaned from all those emails.
Right.
I mean, it's far beyond the government. It's Google and who knows, you know, what Amazon is doing with their information. And I mean, it's terrifying.
And what they can do with it. And then there's the issue of perverse incentives. You know, you have a privatized prison industry, and they're then lobbying to make laws longer and three strikes you're out and things so that they have more customers. Anyhow, Richard Viguerie, this conversation could go on for a long time, but the music has started. The machine is going to cut us off. Thanks so much for being with us. Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Richard Viguerie, his new book is coming out. It's called Takeover. His last book is Betrayed, and the website is conservativehq.com. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Tom.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Donna in Lincoln Park, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Donna, what's up? Donna, you are on the air. Oh, Donna must be watching her TV instead of listening to her telephone. Let's try Steve in Seattle. Hey, Steve, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Community Access TV.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to call you to kind of set the record straight for Sandra Day O'Connor,
mm-hmm.
the Smithsonian.
Okay.
The point that she was going to make... that woman that called stopped in the middle of the paragraph. If you will, mm-hmm. I'll just read the rest of it.
Okay.
If you will. After they fastened their robes. Three sentences. Then the justices, without fail, engage in a wonderful custom. Each justice shakes the hand of every other justice before walking into the courtroom. An important reminder that, despite the justices' occasional differences in opinion, The court is a place of collegiality and common purpose. So her point was not at all being dressed.
Mm-hmm.
It was to get to that particular ritual they have to make almost a physical connection.
Sure.
Between, you know, sure. Before they walk in.
Okay. So well, correction made and noted, but let me add, I mean, virtually every case that the Supreme Court takes now is what's called judicial review. It's deciding whether it's the judiciary, the third branch of government, reviewing the activities of the first and second branch of government. And their right to do that is not established in the Constitution. And there was a great debate about this in the early days of the Republic, and there was a great debate about it at the Constitutional Convention, and there was a great debate about it that you can read in the Federalist Papers. It's in the 80s, most of them written by Hamilton, Federalist 82, 83, 84, 85, as I recall, right around in there. 84, I think, is the main one, that were on the judiciary, on the topic of the judiciary. And there was this very, very loud and strong debate about whether the judiciary, which was unelected and served for life, should have the power to review the actions of Congress and of the president, and reverse those actions or invalidate those actions. And they chose not to put that power into the Constitution. In fact, they did the exact reverse. If you read Article 3, which defines the judiciary and what their powers and rights are, and read Section 2, it says that the Supreme Court, where it specifically names the Supreme Court above all other courts, it says the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations established by Congress. In other words, it makes the Supreme Court subordinate to Congress, not superior to Congress. And for the first 50 years of our country, only twice did they try to oversee something that Congress had passed. And, you know, in Dred Scott and Marbury versus Madison. And now it's 100% of what they do. And I think that it has turned them into an unelected monarchy, and it's destroying our republic, in my humble opinion. So, you know, I it's wonderful that they have comity among themselves, but they are the royalty. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the European royal families who are all cousins, you know, getting together and having a toast. Yeah, we'll have a war together, but, you know, we're still all related. Steve, thank you for the call, and thanks for setting the record straight. I do appreciate that. 20 minutes past the hour. interesting. David Gregory, and I think he's, yeah, this is David Gregory.
Ability to monitor communications. This is what he said then.
It's Frank Church.
In the need to develop a capacity to know what potential enemies are doing, the United States government has perfected a technological capability that enables us to monitor the messages that go through the air. Now, that is necessary and important to the United States as we look abroad at enemies or potential enemies. We must know. At the same time, that capability at any time could be turned around on the American people. And no American would have any privacy left, such as the capability to monitor everything, telephone conversations, telegrams, it doesn't matter. There would be no place to hide.
And that was Frank Church, August 17th, 1975. And, in fact, I need to write that down because so I can just look for the August 17th, 1975, Frank Church, and get the whole because there was actually a larger quote than that. But this is an important issue. This, you know, to what extent are we going to be the victims of the surveillance state rather than just the perpetrators of it? Anyhow, Doug in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Doug, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Well, Tom, thank you for what you do as well. I just wanted to put the homicide statistics into perspective. I know we had a previous caller earlier talk about how blacks are committing all the murders. They're also the ones who are being murdered, unfortunately. If you look at the statistics, I think the latest complete statistics available are from the FBI in 2011. And the out of roughly 12,500 homicides that year, 6,300 were black victims. And of the perpetrators, 5,400 were black offenders, but over 4,000 were unknown. So I think if you put that in perspective, that African Americans are approximately 12% of our population, and yet they were just about exactly 50% of the murder victims. I think that pretty much backs up what your response was as to who's killing whom.
Yeah.
And the socioeconomic political ramifications of it. And I wanted to make one more quick point. I just filled out my ballot today, and we're voting on, I don't know if you know about Initiative 522 here in Washington, which is to calls for the labeling of genetically modified organisms in our food.
Yeah.
And it was a grassroots effort filed initially by a vegan couple in Tacoma. And although we have a lot of commercials running with the so-called, I am an organic farmer, and this will be bad for Washington because it will drive our food prices up nonsense script. You know, it's Monsanto, Nestle, PepsiCo, DuPont have poured over $20 million into what is essentially a, you know, small regional labeling campaign. And I urge voters in Washington to vote yes on 522.
There you go. If you're in Washington State, and is it is tomorrow the day that you can actually go to the polls?
Yeah, well, here in Washington we have motor voters, so if you have a driver's license or a state issued ID card, you receive your ballot. They were mailed on October 16th.
Automatically,
I'm unfortunately a little late getting mine. Automatically, right? I'm getting mine, and it has to be postmarked by tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, and it has to be postmarked by tomorrow. Okay, Doug, thank you very much. And for our many listeners in Washington State, pay very careful attention to that. Yes, on, was it 522?
522.
Yeah.
Thanks,
great.
Tom.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Sarah in Hemet County, or Hemet, California, excuse me. Hey, Sarah, thank you for watching. What's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. First of all, before I share my information, and thanks for letting me call back today, by the way. Before sharing my information, I'd just like to say that I do think that the country is a lot better off under Obamacare than previously, although Medicare for All would be a much, much better option.
Yes.
All that having been said, That doesn't mean that the law is perfect and that there aren't provisions in the law that might need some tweaking or might need some changing. If Medicare Advantage does go away and is defunded, that's going to push more people back onto original Medicare, more seniors,
right.
And there are going to be higher premiums in many localities. There are going to be higher premiums, and seniors are not eligible to go on the exchanges.
Right.
Okay, so if a senior, a low-income senior who maybe only is living on $1,000 a month in Social Security, is hit with a premium that's $150 higher, an additional premium, that's going to be huge to that person.
Well, the premium for Medicare and the premium for Medicare Advantage is typically the same, aren't they not?
No, what it is, here, let me explain it to you. Okay, Medicare Part B is typically maybe about $104 a month.
Right.
Most of the Medicare Advantage plans, probably because they are being subsidized, okay, you don't pay any additional premium over that amount.
No, you pay the $104 a month just as if you were on Medicare.
Yeah, you just pay that $104 and you don't pay any additional premium.
Right, I understand.
But on the Medic app, you're going to pay an additional premium, and depending on your locality, it isn't the same everywhere, okay?
Right.
It could be a really worthwhile plan could be an additional $150 a month.
Right. No, I understand, Sarah, and I'm with you. I think it's crazy that we're asking seniors to pay for Medicare at all. I mean, Medicare should be free health care for people who are retired. I don't get why this happened or how this happened or when this happened, and I need to do some homework and find out. But it just, you know, particularly for a low-income senior, it's crazy. Sarah, thank you for the call. You're right. We need to fix this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
There's a lot we need to fix. And you know, to start out with, you know, these people who made this $25 trillion, maybe we should have them help pay for some of it. Good, the bad, and the very, very notoriously ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The good, Oxtel, Netherlands. The Dutch town was already the first town in the Netherlands to ban fracking, and now it's become the first town in Europe to completely divest from fossil fuel. Last week, the Boxtel officials announced that they will move the town's money out of more than 200 oil and gas companies and place it instead in more sustainable industries. In December, the Boxtel will host a conference urging other municipalities to follow its lead. You know, when it comes to fighting the fossil fuel industry, I think it's safe to say that the rest of Europe should learn to go Dutch. The bad. Senator Rand Paul. As the plagiarism allegations keep mounting, the Kentucky senator has started going on the defensive, blasting people like MSNBC host Rachel Maddow, who have called him out for stealing language from the Heritage Foundation and Wikipedia. The war on words took an especially ugly turn on yesterday's edition of ABC's This Week when Senator Paul said he wished dueling were still legal in Kentucky so he could settle his controversy with a nice gunfight. Check it out.
Like I say, if dueling were legal in Kentucky, if they keep it up, you know, it'd be a duel challenge. But I can't do that because I can't hold office in Kentucky.
So what's the fix?
In case you didn't catch it, Senator Paul said he wants to shoot Rachel Maddow because she caught him plagiarizing. Unbelievable. And the very, very ugly, the Metropolitan Police of London. New documents read last week in a British court show that London police detained Glenn Greenwald's partner, David Miranda, back in August because they thought his possession of top secret intelligence documents made him a terrorist. Yes, a terrorist. In the Metropolitan Police's opinion, Miranda was a threat to public safety because he was going to bring the documents to Greenwald, who would then publish them in The Guardian. The court documents read as follows, quote, "The disclosure or threat of disclosure is designed to influence a government and is made for the purpose of promoting a political or ideological cause. This, therefore, falls within the definition of terrorism, and as such, we request that the subject is examined under Schedule 7. Schedule 7 is a reference to the part of the UK Terrorism Act of 2000. What does all this mean? It means that the London Metropolitan Police think that journalism is terrorism. And that is very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. Just a quick heads up, by the way. My new book, The Crash of 2016, is coming out this month. It actually, the official release date is the 12th of November. So what is today, the 4th? Yeah, today's the 4th. So it's 8 days from today. And I got my advanced copy. I'm about halfway through reading it. I wrote a pretty good book. You know, it's funny, like it's, you know, it's almost a year ago that we finished writing this book and editing it and going through it over and over and over again, me and Louise and Sam and our publishers at Hachette 12 is the imprint. And it takes me a while. I have to let a book, every time I write a book, I read it when it finally comes out, which is almost always, you know, half a year to a year later. And I find all kinds of stuff where, you know, I could have said that better. But still, I think this is a pretty damn good book. And it's called The Crash of 2012, or 2016, rather, and The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do About It. And just a quick heads up, and we will have this stuff on our website, but I'll be in Chicago on the 14th of November at the Frugal Muse in Darien. I'll be in Minneapolis on the 16th of November at the Operating Engineers Hall. That, by the way, is a ticketed event. You have to get tickets for it. And included with your admission, you get a drink, a snack, and a book. You get a book. So basically, you know, you're buying the book through the by ticketing. So if you're in Minneapolis or you want to come to the Minneapolis gig, go to am950radio.com to buy your ticket. Everything else pretty much is just, you know, a straight book signing. I'll be in Denver at the Tattered Cover on November 19th. Minneapolis is the 16th. I'll be in Los Angeles on the 20th at the Santa Monica Bay Women's Club. I'll be in San Francisco on the 21st at the Commonwealth Club. I'll be in Portland on the 22nd of November at Powell's. I'll be in Washington, D.C. on December 3rd at Politics and Prose. And so that's our book tour, plus, you know, being on the air and all that kind of thing. So, but just a heads up, the book is, you know, it's available. They'll start shipping them any day now from all the electronic sources. And the title of the book is The Crash of 2016, the new book by Tom Hartman. A little, I guess that's shameless self-promotion, but I really do feel that the message of this book is an important one, and you will find considerable consequence, considerable value in the stuff that's in it. And by the way, if you don't want to pay for it, go to your public library and ask them to get a copy. I'm a big supporter of public libraries and or for that matter, you know, ask somebody you know who's got a copy if you can borrow it. You know, you don't have to buy a book in order to read it. Cliff in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Before I get to my topic, thanks for mentioning Dianne Feinstein and her position. I've called her office several times to voice my displeasure over her stance because I'm a California resident and she needs to hear from the people in her state. And she also wants to change the definition of what a journalist is. You've pointed that out, too.
Yeah. Let me, by the way, if I may, since we're on this topic, I just found that Frank Church quote, the entire quote. And it's three paragraphs, maybe five sentences. May I read it?
Sure.
Okay, we heard him on the clip on Face the Nation saying the capability, this electronic capability, at any time could be turned around on the American people and no American would have any privacy left, such as the capability to monitor everything, telephone conversations, telegrams, it doesn't matter, there would be no place to hide. He goes on to say, and this is the part that David Gregory chose not to put on the air, and I think this is the most important part. Frank Church went on to say on August 17, 1975, if this government ever became a tyranny, if a dictator ever took charge in this country, the technological capacity that the intelligence community has given the government could enable it to impose total tyranny, and there would be no way to fight back because the most careful effort to combine together in resistance to the government, no matter how privately it was done, is within the reach of the government to know. Such is the capability of this technology. I don't want to see this country ever go across that bridge. I know the capability that is there is to make tyranny total in America, and we must see to it that this agency and all, he was speaking of the CIA at that time, and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law and under proper supervision so that we never cross over that abyss. That is the abyss from which there is no return. Frank Church. And I would say that that technology, that capability is now, you know, I'm concerned about the government having that ability. I'm far more concerned about large transnational corporations that consider themselves stateless and feel that they owe so little allegiance to the United States that they go out of their way to stash their money overseas so as not to pay taxes to the United States, corporations like Apple and Google and whatnot, that I'm far more concerned with that information being held by those corporations. Now, to you, Cliff.
Yeah, my point was, you know, another caller had pointed out this corporate takeover. We've been, like you said, the Reaganomics, this is 32 years we've been seeing this deregulation and war on unions. And I agree with you on all that, and Bill Clinton had a hand in this too, but I haven't heard you mention Obama helping to perpetuate this whole thing with this free trade agreement. And
I did a whole hour rant on it last Thursday.
Okay, but have you mentioned the TPP today?
Yes, the rant was specifically about the TPP. President Obama has this thing being negotiated in secret. He will not tell Congress what's in it. We've had several members of Congress on this program, most notably Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown, loudly, and Peter DeFazio, loudly complaining about that fact. And I'm encouraging people to contact both the White House and the Democratic Party and point out to them that if the Democratic Party should take the position that so-called free trade is a disaster and no more free trade deals and let's do away with the ones that we have and do away with all these guest worker visas and go back to America for Americans and American jobs for Americans, that political party will start winning elections like nobody's business.
It sounds great in theory, Tom, but like you said, with the money in politics now, it seems a really tough battle to make this come about.
It is.
Really difficult.
I mean, the Supreme Court has made it very difficult. You're absolutely right.
Yes. Now, anyways, I just wanted to mention the TPP. I thought it would fit into this conversation.
Yeah, it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and this is the next big free trade deal, and it involves, I believe, 14 countries along the Pacific Rim, from the United States to Vietnam and whatnot, you know, and Australia, and what it's going to do is it's going to give, like with NAFTA, it gives corporations the right to sue the U.S. government. It gives transnational corporations the right to sue you as an individual inside a country, because you have somehow harmed their profitability by your political activity. This is wrong, at least from what we're learning of what's been leaked. And when we look at CAFTA and SHAFTA and NAFTA, these other free trade deals, they all seem to be doing the same thing, which is basically screw the average working person and make lots and lots of money for transnational corporations and the billionaires who got to be billionaires by running them. So I'm very concerned about the TPP, Cliff. And Obama's going to try and fast-track this thing. Right now, fast-track authority is illegal. He's trying to get Congress to pass fast-track authority. And as soon as they do, he will drop TPP in and say, let's put this on fast-track authority. And we need to resist both. The Constitution is very clear. Treaties should require two-thirds of the Senate to pass. Cliff, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm a big supporter of Barack Obama. I voted for him twice. I think he's a good man in his heart. But on this topic, he is wrong, and we need to be sure and let him know that we agree with that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jeff in New Lisbon, Wisconsin, watching on Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
You're referring to Sandra
Day O'Connor? Yeah.
Yeah. On the election date of the 2000, she was in a fancy restaurant, and somebody said that Bush is losing in Florida. And she said, oh, my God, that's horrible. She got up from her chair, and I know right where she went. She went to talk to Alito, because the very next day, even though the Supreme Court in Florida, as you well know, voted 5-0 to count the votes, recount the votes, the Supreme Court in D.C., along with Alito and Sarah Day O'Connor and three other people, people decided that they should not vote. Well, then why even have an election if you're gonna allow the Supreme Court to go ahead and decide that we're not going to count the votes in a certain state.
Oh, and they knew how wrong what they were doing was that in Bush v. Gore, they wrote right into the decision that this decision should not be precedent. This should just be a one-off. In other words, please don't pay attention to what we did and don't do what we did ever again, although it has been referenced several times since then, so it has become precedent. And that story of Sandra Day O'Connor saying, oh, my God, and getting up and running out of the restaurant has been repeated many times. I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's real, but it makes perfect sense because her husband had Alzheimer's and she knew it at that time, and she wanted to retire very quickly from the Supreme Court and so that she could care for her husband. And she did not want to retire when there was a Democrat in the White House. She wanted to she was a good Republican. She always had been. And, you know, which is another reason why the Supreme Court should not have, excuse me, it should not have as much power as it has, because it, you know, it has become essentially a political actor. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Jeff, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Frank, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, thanks for taking me. There's a CCTV on Cambridge. But what I would like to say is the whole thing about this, the First Amendment you're talking about, the Citizens Union members. All right, here it is. A equals B equals C. If free speech equals people and people equals money, then free speech equals money, then the whole idea is that money equals people.
Right.
If A equals B equals C, they all, you see what I mean? This whole idea of the First Amendment ruling by CU, on the CU thing is completely...
They had to, Frank, in order to pull this thing off, and I write about this in my book on equal protection, they had to completely twist logic upside down. The argument that the Supreme Court used was that you and I are deprived of the right to be informed about issues if corporations don't have access to free speech and money is not used as speech, because corporations are actors in the political arena or in the economic arena, and they can inform us. That was their logic. Frank, thanks for the call. Back, John Hartman here with you, and our news today brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can help a goat, give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person that you helped out. Victoria Jones is with us with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Nice to see you. What's going on?
Well, I'm not sure whether you already had Supreme Court news.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I'll give you some Supreme Court news. Mm-hmm. Supreme Court will not consider Oklahoma's appeal seeking to reinstate its law banning medical abortions like those performed with the drug RU486.
Right. I saw that story this morning. I have not mentioned it on the air. Thank you for pointing that out.
So the state Supreme Court said the law, which would restrict the use of several abortion-inducing drugs to their labels, effectively bans all medical abortions. That apparently was enough for the justices to leave alone the lower court decision striking down the law. But there are similar controversies in other states, particularly Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so another case may reach the high court.
Mm. Okay.
Now, would you like a preview of tomorrow's case?
Sure.
Okay. Carol Ann Bond of Lansdale, Pennsylvania, 2007, discovered that her best friend was pregnant by her husband.
Okay.
That's Melinda Haynes. And she did what any woman would do. She went to Amazon.com and ordered a combination of potassium dichromate. And then she stole from her employer 10-chloro-10-H-phenoxarcine, mixed them together, smeared them on the doorknob, mailbox, and car of the then pregnant friend, ex-friend now, and waited to see what would happen.
This being something that is poisonous and absorbable through the skin.
Yes. Well, unfortunately for her, it turns bright orange.
Right.
It's simple to avoid, and the friend noticed it, so she told the police and got a burn, and they thought it was cocaine and told her to take it to the car wash. Then when she got it on her mailbox, she told the post office, and then the postal inspectors nabbed Carol Ann Bond for spreading the chemical compound, and then the feds charged her under the Chemical Weapons Convention of 1997.
So the attempted, what actually burned this woman's thumb, when the burn was treated by running cold water over it, this attempted injury, arguably attempted murder, but I think that it's fairly well established that her intent was to burn her friend, not to kill her. But in any case, this malicious attempt was prosecuted under a very, very severe law. And she got 10 years, didn't she?
Yes, that's right. And the question is, can Congress exceed its enumerated powers and supersede states' authority over local crimes when it's acting on an international treaty? Because Carol Ann Bond's lawyers say that the 10th Amendment is involved here.
So, in other words, what they're saying is that local law should trump international law.
Yes, and they're saying that the Chemical Weapons Convention Implementation Act of 1998 should not apply and that she's not a terrorist.
Right. Hmm. Very interesting.
So I think we're going to hear some fascinating comments, not only about chemical weapons, but about this bizarre affair.
Yeah, and this is going to be heard tomorrow in court.
Did
the best friend who was pregnant by this woman's husband end up giving birth?
I don't know the end of the story.
Just curious.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know the end of the story. Speaker John Boehner said today that he opposes the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
In other words, in John Boehner's worldview, if somebody working for you is doing just a fine job and you discover that they're gay, you should have the right to fire them.
That's correct. The speaker believes this legislation will increase frivolous litigation and cost American jobs, especially small business jobs, according to his spokesman, Michael Steele.
Hmm. What's frivolous about my discovering that, for example, Jim is actually gay? I mean, Jim is married. He's probably not gay, but let's say he was. And I just decided, you know, I don't like gay people. I'm going to fire Jim. Jim, you're fired. And then Jim goes and says, there's a federal law that says you can't do that. I'm going to sue you. I mean, it's how is that different from my, well, I guess you don't discover that somebody's black. But, you know, there have to be other things that you can, like, you can discover that somebody's Jewish. You didn't think that they were Jewish and fire them. I mean, what's different? I don't get it.
I find it unanswerable myself.
Okay.
They also said, we have always believed this is covered by existing law, which is
not the case.
Not the case.
In fact, gay people are routinely fired for being gay. There's a long list of them who have come out, no pun intended, or perhaps pun intended, and pointed out that they were fired by their employer only when their employer discovered that they were gay, because their employer was offended by their being gay.
It's very interesting.
Yes, I think it's...
President Obama might soon renew his push for a $9 minimum wage, according to Jason Furman, the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers. Who
Good
is
on him. That would revive our economy, in part.
Well, that's what he said. You'll certainly be hearing more about it, Furman told reporters at the Wall Street Journal event today.
You know, there's a bunch of things that have gotten through the Senate, and I think that's probably something that might be able to get through the Senate.
Well, they have plans to take up a minimum wage bill this month.
Yeah, that then end up dying in the House of Representatives. And there's just not enough publicity about that. You know, the comprehensive immigration reform, for example. If John Boehner would simply drop it on the floor for a vote, it would pass.
Probably would.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
Listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. America is falling apart. I mean, literally, 32 years of Reaganomics, and we are falling apart, and our super rich are to blame for it. There was once upon a time in this country when the super rich needed you and me and working class Americans to be successful. They needed us for their roads, for their businesses, for their communications, for their transportation, as their customers, most importantly, and for their overall success. Also, they needed us as their workers. The super rich rode on the same trains as us, flew in the same planes as us. They went to the same hospitals. They learned at our schools. Their success directly depended on us and on the well-being of the nation, and they knew it. But times have changed, and the super rich of the 21st century no longer think that you and I are needed for their continued success. You know, in a whole lot of ways, these people have just given up on America. Paul Buchheit brilliantly pointed this out, actually in a whole variety of venues. It's over at AlderNet as well. As they accumulate more and more wealth, the very rich have less need for society. At the same time, they convince themselves that they made it on their own and that contributing to societal needs is unfair to them. There is ample evidence, Paul writes, that this small group of takers is giving up on the country that made it possible for them to build a huge fortune. Buchheit goes on to say, the rich have always needed the middle class to work in their factories and buy their products. With globalization, though, this is no longer true. They don't need our infrastructure for their yachts and helicopters and submarines. They pay for private schools for their kids, private securities for their homes. They have private emergency rooms to avoid the healthcare hassle. All they need is an assortment of servants who might be guest workers coming to America on H-2B visas, willing to work less for less than the middle class American can afford. End of quote. And here's the really, really scary part of this. These millionaires and billionaires who've given up on America, who've given up on the working class, they're the ones who are in charge of the political process in this country. And, you know, they've brainwashed average voting Republicans into thinking that the success of working class Americans is irrelevant to the future of this country. As a result, the Republican politicians are no longer investing in America. They're no longer investing in the things that have traditionally made America and our working class successful. For example, our infrastructure. According to the American Society of Civil Engineers annual report card on America's infrastructure, it's a mess. Our roads are falling apart. Our transportation systems are in turmoil. Our energy and electrical systems are stuck back in the 1900s. Non-defense related infrastructure spending was around $325 billion a year when George W. Bush set foot inside the White House. Today it's only $235 billion a year, $90 billion a year drop from when Bush took office. Republican politicians brainwashed by America's super rich or owned by them have repeatedly refused to fund comprehensive infrastructure spending bills, all in the name of austerity. But cutting funding to the nation's infrastructure is not the right way to address America's debt or spending problems. And cutting spending is like no way to rebuild the country, right? Oh, yeah, let's rebuild the country. Oh, well, you know, why don't you volunteer? Over at the Financial Times, there's an article about this. Cardiff Garcia points out, excuse me, it's also likely that much of the investment that has been foregone in the name of fiscal consolidation will have to be made eventually anyways, only it will be made when rates are higher, exacerbating the long-term fiscal outlook rather than improving it. As Think Progress points out, continued underfunding in this arena over the coming years will cost businesses $1 trillion in lost sales and cost the economy 3.5 million jobs. The Society of Civil Engineers, another group that, pardon me, has no political agenda. They say it's going to take $3.6 trillion in investment by 2020, $450 billion a year, just to bring America into the 21st century and avoid risking a complete infrastructure collapse. But the super rich don't care. As long as they have their private schools, their private hospitals, their private airports, their private places, they're bleeding working class Americans dry while destroying the infrastructure of a nation that has really given them their success. I mean, no matter what Jamie Dimon or Charles Koch or Shelley Adelson tell you, America's wealthy elite did not make their fortunes on their own. Without a strong economy and infrastructure, America's millionaires and billionaires wouldn't be where they are today. It's really that simple. So what can we do right now to rebuild America's infrastructure and give a boost to the American economy? First, we got to bring an end to globalization. We should be protecting American jobs instead of letting the super rich ship them overseas and build factories in third world countries. But more importantly, we need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts and make sure the America's wealthy elite are paying their fair share to support our economy. So we've got enough money to build the infrastructure. Right now, that burden of rebuilding America, to the extent that we're doing it at, you know, to the tune of $90 billion a year less than when Bush was president, right now, the burden for paying for that is on the backs of working class Americans, and that's just wrong. It's ridiculous that working class Americans struggle to survive day to day and are paying more in taxes than billionaire banksters and oil tycoons. A lot has changed in America over the last 100 years. But one thing pretty much remains the same. For the super rich to be successful, they still need, at least for the moment, now this is changing, but they still need you and me. They need us to build their roads, to buy from their businesses, to maintain their communications, to maintain the infrastructure systems for their transportation. Our infrastructure may be crumbling, but frankly, I believe there's still time to get America back on the road to success because we're all in this together. So how do we do it? We say no to global free trade. We say no to globalization. We say, you know, by the way, let me point out, this is the lesson that Europe is learning. I would predict that within 5 years, there will be no more euro. There'll still be a eurozone, but there won't be any more euro. Or there will be a euro, but it'll only be 4 or 5 countries. Because the euro is bankrupting a bunch of countries in Europe. Because it's like a free trade policy on steroids with the currency being regulated by basically Germany. Paul Krugman has an op-ed in today's New York Times in which he basically says, you know, Germany's the problem with Europe. And they don't realize it. They're forcing austerity on everybody, but they won't accept it for themselves. Germany, you could say Germany has won World War II with the euro and the eurozone. And, I mean, you know, it's great that Germany is back as a country, you know, with a small-d democracy and progressive values to a large extent. But at the expense of the rest of Europe? And then in the United States, you know, we're not back at all. We're collapsing. And, you know, you can have Rick Perry running around all day long going, yeah, I created more jobs here in Texas than anywhere than the rest of the country combined. But, you know, there's $7.25 an hour jobs. Really? And they're having it. They're literally tearing up roads in Texas because it's cheaper to maintain dirt roads. It costs $300 a year to maintain a dirt road. It costs about $1,000 a year to maintain a paved road. Is that the direction that America should be going? I don't think so.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's time to completely repudiate Reaganomics and reverse the destruction of the last 32 years of political activity by both parties. 15 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and Michelle in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Michelle, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom. How are you doing? First of all, my deepest condolences.
Heart on Higgins.
My heart goes out to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I've got a little orange guy, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, along with three others and a dog and a bird. My deepest, most heartfelt condolences. To go along with I started off with one analogy, and now another one popped into my head. See how this works. Everybody picture in your mind. Reaganomics has kind of been like a bizarro, sicko game of strip poker where the dealer is the Reaganomics, and they're cheating. So it's deal, deal, deal. You play your hand. Oh, boom, employment at will. Oh, I'm sorry, you just lost your shirt. Deal, deal, deal. I don't know, pick another one.
Cut taxes on the rich.
Cut taxes. Oh, I'm sorry, you just lost your shoes.
Yeah.
So on down the line.
Yeah. Do away with welfare. Stop funding public education. Stop funding R&D.
Exactly. Now you lost your socks. Now you lost it. And then fast forward to the surveillance that we're dealing with now.
Well, hang on just a second. There's a piece that you missed. But when you get bare naked in this game of strip poker where Reagan is dealing and he's cheating, then he says, oh, by the way, now that you're bare naked, if you'd like to continue playing, I will loan you the money to buy some clothes that you can put back on that you can lose a little later on in exchange for your house and your credit cards and your student loans.
That extends it even further. That makes it even more vicious.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that. I thought about getting to the naked part. Now we're at the surveillance level where you have no privacy.
Yeah, you're right, because we're all naked.
Well, and then that takes me to the analogy that I called about in the first place was with everybody remember the story of the Emperor's New Clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the masses of the people in the streets that were all clothed, and the Emperor is walking happy-go-lucky down the street naked and has no clue.
Right.
And what we have now is the reverse. The Emperors have stolen all of our clothes. This nasty Reaganomics game of strip poker, and they have convinced us, which is why people vote against their own best interests, that we're wearing the clothes. We're naked.
Right.
And and the NSA stuff, the lack of privacy, if that really doesn't make it almost literal, and that's what people need to realize, and I think people are realizing this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I don't know, somehow the Sandra Day O'Connor and the Supreme Court robe thing plays into that beautifully somehow, as aren't they the emperors?
Well, they're the new royal, not the new royalty, they've been the royalty in the United States for some years, but it's really just since the 70s that the Supreme Court has been making momentous decisions, has been, you know, overturning acts of law and creating law and doctrines from whole cloth.
Right, and combined with the Reaganomics. I mean, that's almost a literal translation of the analogy.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Michelle, excellent. Great thinking. Thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. And it's a good one. I mean, never to play strip poker with her. It's a woman who thinks things through. We'll be back. The W.M. Keck Observatory in Waimea, Hawaii. Scientists at the University of California, Berkeley, University of Hawaii in Manoa. They have determined that about one out of five of the sun-like stars in our galaxy have Earth-like planets that could host life. Wow. I mean, there's billions of stars in our galaxy, and I don't know how many of them are sun-like, but actually, the nearest sun-like star with an Earth-sized planet is probably only 12 years, light years away and can be seen with the naked eye. That's pretty amazing. Every fifth star has a planet like Earth. Which makes you wonder, I mean, is it possible that life throughout the universe is getting smarter as the universe gets more complex, and therefore we're all hitting the space age at the same time? Or is it possible that other planets got there way before we did? I mean, there are much older parts of the galaxy, of the universe, than the galaxy that we're part of, and there are much younger parts. So they're still in a lot of turmoil and, you know, would not be so hospitable to life. It's real interesting. Lots of interesting stuff to think about. Peter in central Pennsylvania, you wanted to talk about John Kiriakou.
Yes, indeed. How are you?
Fine. For our listeners who don't know who okay. John is, why don't you reboot this?
Okay. John is a CIA agent. I thought he was sort of like Ryan in Tom Clancy's books, an analyst.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly isn't. I don't want to say any more about that. I'm doing this with John's permission, okay? I'd like to start with a corrected address, and we're trying to get him into a halfway house program.
Is he out of prison, or is he getting out of prison?
Heck no, we're trying to get him into a halfway. He's still in Loretto, PA, same place.
Uh-huh.
So
federal prison.
An address? Okay. John Kiriakou, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U.
Mm-hmm.
Next part's important. It's a serial number, 79637-083. It's FCI Loretto, L-O-R-E-T-T-O, P.O. Box 1000, and that's L-O-R-E-T-T-O, Loretto, P.A., and the zip is 15940.
Now, Peter, would you please post that on today's daily blog, our homepage blog over at tomhartman.com?
I can do that.
If you do that, then I'll make sure that it gets into our newsletter and people will be able to find it more easily. And, you know, we've got tens of thousands of people who get our newsletter every day. So.
All right. I originally got the address, I think it was back in June. You read his letter over the air with an address, and he and I have been writing ever since on a weekly basis. What he sent me was a letter from a James Moran. He's a representative in Alexandria, Virginia.
He's a member of the House of Representatives.
Folks out there. Right. If the folks out there want to write to their local representative encouraging John into a halfway house program, it would really help.
Mm-hmm.
If your folks would write to John, he'll send them a copy of this letter from James Moran, and it'll give you an idea of what John's all about and how he's trying to get into a halfway house program. Very quickly, John's receiving Peacemaker of the Year Award from the Peace and Justice Center in Sonoma County, California.
Yeah, John is a whistleblower on the national security state.
Oh, yes, indeed. He certainly is. He's the one that got nailed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
okay, November 9th, he'll receive that award, and I guess it's going to be in D.C. He has asked his wife, Heather, to accept it, and he is also trying to get Dan Ellsberg to be with Heather to accept this.
Hmm.
Now, second part of this is, I just got this today. It's a copy of a letter from Bishop Emeritus John McCarthy, and it's the Diocese of Austin, Texas. And it's a letter to Obama, first paragraph, congratulatory. The next two paragraphs are pretty spicy for a bishop. But anyway, he's recommending John for the same thing. So if your folks want to write to John and then write to your local representative and try to get him out a little bit early.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. And let me also add, Don Siegelman is still a political prisoner. And there's a strong effort out there to pardon Don Siegelman, to get President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman. He along with John Kiriakou, for very different reasons. I mean, Don Siegelman, his big crime was he angered Karl Rove. And free-don.org is the website for the effort to free Don Siegelman. Does John Kiriakou have a website supporting him at this point?
No, not that I know of.
You might want to think of starting one, Peter, or getting some people together to help start one.
That's a fine
idea. It's a lot easier for me to say free-don.org than to read that long address that you just gave. And at free-don.org, for example, you can figure out how to contact Don Siegelman. You could do the same thing for John Kiriakou, or somebody could.
Yeah. I have one final comment from the Ayn Randers out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've read her books many, many years ago, and I thought, okay, that makes sense. But now that I've grown up, I've given up reading science fiction.
Yep.
If they want to read something, get Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States.
Which is now out in comic book
form. Thank you for your time. Pardon me?
It's now out in comic book form.
Which one? Ayn Rand?
No. Howard Zinn's People's History
God.
It's somewhat abridged, but it's available in a comic book form, you know, for the younger generation and you know, for young people and for old people, too. It's very, very digestible, very readable. It's brilliant. Anyhow, Peter, thank you for the call, and thanks for the update on John Kiriakou. And when you write back to him, please tell him that we still remember him on this program and that I personally send him my very best regards. And that I strongly encourage him to get somebody to put a website up there so that people can make, you know, maybe even start a nonprofit organization so people can make donations or at the very least can petition on his behalf. Thank you, Peter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And as I said, Don Siegelman, you can get the information about him at free-don.org. Guess what? The insurance companies are figuring out ways to screw people. Surprise, surprise. No, seriously. These letters, these cancellation letters that people are getting, they're saying, you know, you've been paying $200 a month for your policy or $50 a month for your policy or whatever. And I mean, there's one woman who was paying $50 a month for what she thought was an insurance policy. And if she went into the hospital, it paid $50 a day. Good luck with that, right? I paid the first $15 on pharmaceuticals. I mean, this is a joke. It's not a health insurance policy. It's worse than a subprime mortgage. So anyhow, they sent her a letter saying we can't offer this policy after the first of the year because of Obamacare. They didn't say because, you know, it's an exploding policy, it's a junk policy, it's worthless, and Obamacare is setting standards for the first time. They said, we can't offer this policy, but we do have a $500 or $600 policy or $1,000 policy that we will automatically roll you over into. You don't have to do anything. Isn't that nice of them? What they forgot to mention is that if you went on to one of the exchanges, you could find a policy for half that cost. If you went to their competitors, you could find a policy for half that cost. If you go onto the exchange, you can get, if your income is below roughly $50,000 a year, you can get substantial subsidies. It's amazing. TPM called up the insurance company, Talking Points Memo. In the one case of this one particular woman who had gotten basically this very deceptive insurance company letter and said, why didn't you tell her the truth? And they said, well, we assume she knows that we have competitors. Right. One state has actually put an end to this. So we'll see where this goes. Radcast reports Gainesville, Georgia has seen levels 51 counts per minute, spiking at 75. Robbinsville, New Jersey, these are radiation counts. You know, normal background radiation, 10, 12, sometimes as high as 20. It depends on where you live. You might have a lot of granite, a lot of radon, but cosmic rays and things, 10, 12. Salisbury, Mass. Is hitting 72. Robbinsville, New Jersey, spiking 63. Fukushima, 16,000 counts per minute. The alert is 100 counts per minute. But anyhow, this is from radcast.org. And Rand Paul wants to shoot Rachel Maddow. That's what he said. He wants to have a duel with her. Really? Mike in Lebanon, Missouri. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today? Mike, you are on the air. Okay, Mike doesn't know that he's on the air. So how about Kathy in Valparaiso, Indiana? Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Tom. I'm pretty sure you know about George Lakoff's book, Don't Think of an Elephant.
I know it well. I know George. So yeah.
I pulled it off my little library, and I went to page 25 after listening to you today. And could I read a couple of the paragraphs?
You could read a couple sentences. We generally discourage reading, but if it's short.
Well, it reinforces what you've been saying today. People who avoid taxes like corporations that move to Bermuda are not paying their dues to their country. It is patriotic to be a taxpayer. It is traitorous to desert your country and not pay your dues. But the other part I wanted to read to you, because I don't know if you remember this, was what Mr. Senior Bill Gates had to say about his son.
Okay.
Do you remember that part?
I remember having the fellow who co-authored a book with him about the estate tax, whose name is escaping me at the moment, on the program several times, talking about how, talking about estate taxes and how it's an important thing for us to have an estate tax. But go ahead.
Yeah, I just found it fascinating because you were talking about Bill Gates that I'd come across his father. It says, perhaps Bill Gates Sr. said it best. In arguing to keep the inheritance tax, he pointed out that he and Bill Jr. did not invent the Internet. They just used it to make billions. There is no such thing as a self-made man. Every businessman has used the vast American infrastructure, which the taxpayers paid for, to make his money. And then it goes on to more. But the end of it was the wealthy have gotten rich using what previous taxpayers have paid for. They owe the taxpayers of this country a great deal and should be paying it back.
Right. And we used to understand that. I mean, before Ronald Reagan came along, the top tax rate was 74%. Corporate tax rates were, they weren't drilled full of loopholes. Corporations contributed about a quarter, as much as a third, actually, during the Eisenhower administration, to the tax base of the United States. Tariffs contributed substantially to our tax base, import tariffs. And, so therefore, middle-class workers didn't have to pay that much, and the wealthy paid their fair share. All of that got turned on its head by Reaganomics, all of that. And 32 years later, we look back and say, what happened to the American middle class? And then you got a bunch of demagogues going, oh, it's the government. They did this terrible thing to you. Well, okay, yeah, they did. Reaganomics. We can reverse that. We need to go back to, something that did work. We need to go back to FDR New Dealonomics. So, Kathy, thank you for sharing those with me, and thanks for the call. Jason in Dumont, New Jersey. Hey, Jason.
Hi, Tom. I want to talk today about that disturbing editorial from the Wall Street Journal from Edie Sunby.
Right. Yeah, I'm assuming that you've been over to Think Progress and you've seen the rebuttal of that.
I have not. I only just heard about it this morning, and I just got out of work.
Okay.
you know, so I was hoping that you could maybe say some things to people who don't know about it.
Sure. What happened was this woman has a health insurance policy, and she also has cancer, and she's getting treated for that cancer right now, and it's being paid for by her health insurance company. And that health insurance company is United Healthcare. And Stephen J. Hemsley, the billionaire, his company. And the woman is Edie Littlefield Sunby. And she has stage 4 gallbladder cancer survivor. And here's the part that is not told, the part of the story that is not told in the editorial. United Healthcare in the entire state of California has only 8,000 individual policyholders. So they are pulling out of the state of California. This is something that health insurance companies routinely do. It's, you know, with or without Obamacare, they're always looking at how many customers do we have in a state? Is it worth doing business in that state? Should we continue offering policies in that state or not? Because there are, you know, each state has its own insurance regulations, and there are costs of doing business in these states. And United Healthcare is saying, you know, we're not going to do this. We're just not going to do this anymore. So she's losing her policy, and she's going to have to go into the Obamacare exchange and buy a policy. And she's complaining that the Obamacare, you know, exchange, you know, the policies on the exchange are not as good as the one that she has, which may well be the case. And she may well end up paying more. And there are going to be some people who fall through those cracks and you know, fall into those gaps. It's going to be a relatively small number of people, you know, percentage-wise, a couple, 2-3% of people in America. But, it, you know, that's, you know, there's 300 million of us, so 3% is, you know, 9 million people. That's a lot of people.
Yes.
So, but anyhow, this is what Think Progress has said. Here's the company's own justification for leaving. Quote, the company's plans reflect its concern that the first wave of newly insured customers under the law may be the costliest, United Healthcare Chief Executive Officer Stephen Hemsley told investors last October. United Health will watch and see how the exchanges evolve and expects the first enrollees will have a pent-up appetite for medical care. We are approaching them with some degree of caution because of that. End of quote. And then Think Progress says, get that? The company packed its bags and dumped its beneficiaries because it wants its competitors to swallow the first wave of sicker enrollees, only to re-enter the market later and profit from healthy people who still haven't signed up for coverage. And, you know, so this woman is losing her coverage, not because of Obamacare, but because back in October, Stephen Hemsley, the CEO of United Healthcare, made a business decision, basically, because that's what health insurance companies are. They're banks.
Yes, yes, they really are. They're people, too, and they don't have to pay taxes.
Right, right. Yeah, there you go. So if you are familiar with or if you've got any kind of right-wingers throwing this Wall Street Journal op-ed today at you, I encourage you to get over to thinkprogress.org. There's a very elegantly done and well-documented and well-footnoted, well, lots of links inside it that point back outside from, you know, to facts and figures that explain what I just explained. Jason, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to WWRL. Rich in Aurora, Colorado, listening on AM 760. We got just a minute to the break. Rich, a quick one.
Yeah, hey, Tom, great show. I just wanted to combat that guy last week about the mass transit, the guy from Denver and the Libertarian. We have the largest rail transit project going in the country out here in Denver. It's 25,000 new parking spaces, 18 miles of bus rapid transit. We have the bike sharing program that they have in Paris. You can take the bikes on the buses, on the trains. The ridership on the current lines is over 30%, so the Libertarian guy was completely wrong. When the new lines came on, the ridership is over 30%. And when the rest of the line gets completed, we will have, and we also have dedicated bike lanes in parts of the city, and they're adding more and more as they come on. So
that's great.
The guy who called in was the Libertarian was completely fabulous face when he said that ridership on mass transit in America is because, I can tell you out here in Denver, as I said, it's the largest rapid transit.
It's going well. Okay. Well, you know, libertarians very often are fact-free. Rich, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to AM 760 there in Denver. We'll be right back 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Can you imagine McDonald's makes enough money to be the 90th largest economy in the world, but they still have to pay poverty wages? Actually, you know, they don't have to pay poverty wages. They choose to pay poverty wages. Boy, it's getting dark early, isn't it? Look at the, you know, the Capitol there. Capitol there behind me is, it's dark. It's dark out. Daylight savings time. There's an increasing body of science that suggests that daylight savings time is not a good thing for us. I mean, it was a good thing back when Ben Franklin came up with the idea and everybody was a farmer, but now, not so much. Anyhow, Stacy in Athens, Georgia. Hey, Stacy, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, man? I just wanted to make a comment about the Affordable Care Act. I feel like something was necessarily needing to be done. However, I do feel like it's kind of being imposed on our country. And I feel like it's basically kind of violating some of our, you know, freedoms.
Do you think that we should have fire departments?
Yes, I think we should.
And do you think that everybody should be forced to pay taxes to support those fire departments?
I think that, yes, we should all pay taxes.
Okay. Then if you are in favor of paying for somebody else's house that's on fire, I'm guessing probably yours has never been, mine's never been, it's pretty rare. If you're in favor of that, isn't your and my and our neighbor who, you know, whose house might be on fire, aren't our bodies even more important than our houses?
I understand, and I see the angle you're coming from. However, I don't think we're comparing apples to apples. I'm not,
why not?
Talking about, okay, let me explain. I'm not talking about that we don't have, we shouldn't have health insurance. Mm. However, what happens is that some of the things inside the health care, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, actually goes against, you know, certain things that, you know, people that may have religious views don't agree with. And also, you know, you're going to penalize somebody for not having insurance. I just feel like it's kind of being forced.
Okay, let's take those things one at a time. First of all, and let's take them in reverse order. First of all, the penalty is $90 a year. And, Stacy, if you choose not to have health insurance, that $90 a year is you and a few thousand other people refuse to have health insurance. If we collect $90 a year from all of you, it's still probably not going to pay the cost of the uninsured people who show up in the emergency rooms.
Yeah.
And so, you got to have a way to deal with that.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not.
And in terms of, you know, people who have religious preferences, you know, if a corporation like Hobby Lobby wants to proclaim itself Christian and say that it doesn't want to offer health insurance that includes birth control pills to its female employees, I dispute that that corporation should have the legal basis to say that it has a religion. When did corporations have religions?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think it's been an issue of corporations, you know, complaining about the Affordable Care Act being imposed.
No, it's Hobby Lobby. There's already an exemption for churches. Churches can exempt themselves from this thing. That's built into the law. So, you know, if the Catholic Church doesn't want to offer birth control to their priests or their nuns, they don't have to. But Hobby Lobby is a for-profit corporation, and they're asserting that they have the Christian religion. And as a person, under the First Amendment, they have religious freedom. And I think that's just crazy. Stacy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you 10 minutes before the hour. Did I mention John Kirikou's website? I don't think I did. Let me just get to it here. It is defendjohnk.com. So free-don.org and defendjohnk.com are the websites for two of the more high-profile political prisoners in the United States that you need to know about. So just an FYI. Jerry in Long Island, listening on WWRL. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I'd like to discuss the NSA surveillance issue and the things you were discussing with your guest, Richard Viguerie. Two main points. First of all, you know, against the backdrop of some disturbingly bipartisan support for both for these so-called free trade deals that you were discussing,
mm-hmm.
and also the so-called entitlement reforms that were not discussed today, but they've been discussed other days on your shows,
right.
As well as some bipartisan support for all this NSA surveillance. Against that backdrop, I find it very refreshing that two individuals like you that I consider to be on opposite sides of the political spectrum, Richard Viguerie, conservative, and you a progressive, agreeing, and I find myself agreeing with both you and Richard Viguerie on this NSA issue. And I also find Richard Viguerie, I find not only was he 100% right about both Democratic and Republican presidents alike ignoring or disregarding the Fourth Amendment of this country, but in addition, I think this Fourth Amendment issue raises an often ignored issue of who the greater lawbreaker is. For instance, is the greater lawbreaker the government officials who seemingly are violating the highest law of this land, our Constitution, and its Fourth Amendment prohibition against unreasonable, overreaching, and truly Orwellian searches and seizures? Or is it the man who simply discloses the existence of this seemingly unconstitutional program? And I would argue that it is the NSA and the other government.
Yeah, it is not John Kiriakou. It is not Ed Snowden. It is not Daniel Ellsberg. They are not the criminals in my mind. And or they're certainly not the ones who are violating the Constitution. I think an excellent point, Jerry. I think it's a very excellent point. And certainly Don Siegelman did nothing other than upset Karl Rove. I mean, he's a political prisoner.
Oh, yeah.
because he angered Karl. And he also said out loud in the media that an electronic voting machine got flipped. And that's, you know, he went to bed governor of Alabama and he woke up the next day to discover that one voting machine in one Republican precinct with one Republican precinct chairperson, who is the only person in the building overnight, suddenly discovered 15,000 extra votes on that machine, and none of those votes down ballot. In other words, all these people all of a sudden voted for the Republican, for Bob Riley, for governor, but they continue to vote for Democrats for every other race. Ta-da! And Don Siegelman had the gall to point that out. I think, frankly, that was probably his largest crime. But and I say that sarcastically, but I use the word crime sarcastically. But free-don.org and defendjohnk.com are important websites. Jerry, thank you for the call. Lucas in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Lucas, you wanted to respond to the earlier caller who was saying that we shouldn't take away his assault rifle because black people shoot people?
I do, Tom. And I, first of all, I want to say I listen to your show every day. I think you're a brilliant guy, But here's the thing I don't understand about what your caller was trying, the point he was trying to make. There was a time in this country, even assuming that his statistics are correct, there was a time in this country where black men were killed by white men overwhelmingly, more so than black men killed white men. And we didn't solve that problem by arming black males. We didn't give black males assault rifles to end those casualties of those things that were happening back then. We did it by evolving the way we think as a government and as a country, and by putting rules in place to tell people that you can't do this, you can't do that. We didn't do it by arming people and saying, hey, go out and defend yourself against these people that want to hate.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. There is arguably a small exception to that, and that would be the African-American militias in the Civil War, and the fact that the North offered freedom to people who could escape the South and join if they joined the Union Army. But it's just a super technical point. You're absolutely right. You don't solve social ills, even when those social ills involve guns and gun violence or just any kind of violence, like the violence of slavery. You don't solve social ills by taking up arms or by further arming the citizenry, particularly with weapons of war. That's my objection is, this guy who walked into LAX with a semi-automatic assault weapon, an AR-15, basically, there is absolutely no reason for anybody in the United States to own an AR-15. You don't use them for target shooting, you don't use them for hunting, and you don't use them for self-defense. These are weapons of war. They are not civilian weapons. They should not be in the hands of our populace. This is what Adam, you know, I don't want to use his last name on the air anymore. This is what that kid did in Newtown. He used one of these weapons, and it allowed him to kill all these people. You're absolutely right. Lucas, thank you. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant response. Carol, in Dillon, Montana, we have 1 minute to the end of the show today. Carol, it's yours.
Okay. I just wanted to ask a question. Instead of calling it socialism from here on out, why doesn't somebody just turn it around and say it's social responsibility?
What's the it that you're talking about?
Cutting minimum wage and cutting Social Security and cutting this and cutting that. Austerity doesn't work. It takes money to make money.
Mm-hmm. And it takes money to make a government work, and a government that that does work was the idea of the people who founded this country, a government of, by, and for the people, to paraphrase Abraham Lincoln. And it's, yeah, excellent point. It's... who was it who said that it is the, I think it was Oliver Wendell Holmes, that taxes are the price that we pay for living in a civil society? It was either him or the guy who argued the Scopes monkey trial. I forget. Yeah, it was Oliver Wendell Holmes. Okay. Shane, you know everything. So if you say so, I agree. Coming up tomorrow, if the super rich don't need our middle class infrastructure, what is the solution for fixing crumbling roads and bridges? Find out when I challenge a conservative with some other ideas, plus all the news of the day. And don't forget, my new book is out, or will be actually in 8 days, but it's available. You can order it, and you can go to your library if you want to get it for free and ask the library to get it. It's called The Crash of 2016. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. Solar World has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.